Welcome in. We are the Bourbon Brothers, and this is the Liquid Courage Show. We have another fantastic show lined up for you tonight. But before we get started, let's get my co-host in here. He is my partner in crime and the one I can always depend on to bring the funny. He's still broadcasting deep below the frozen tundra at Heinz Field. Ken, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. It's cold outside and lots of ice, so I'm looking forward to warming up. This is kind of like a deja vu for me. It's like we've done this before. I don't know about you.
It does have that reminiscent feeling of having been here and done this before. Well, let's jump right in. If you're new to the show, the format is simple. First, we're going to kick things off with a tasting and discussion of a spirit. It's usually a bourbon. It's a bourbon tonight. And we will continue to enjoy said spirit throughout the remainder of the show. As for the remainder of the show, we're going to focus on a specific episode of a favorite television series where we will start with the pilot and we'll work our way through episode by episode to the series finale. Tonight, we're going to be discussing season 2, episode 3 of Kurt Sutter's Sons of Anarchy, titled Fix. For those of you listening via our podcast, if you like the show, please leave us a glowing review. Give us those 5 stars and then make sure you've subscribed to the podcast so you don't miss a single show. Also, if you prefer a visual medium or you just have morbid curiosity to know why we say we have a face for radio, we also publish every show in 3 parts on YouTube. We also want to hear from you. Send us your praise, your questions, your hate comms. Let us know how we're doing. What do you like about the show? What do you dislike? And what would you like to see more of? You can email your questions to us at ask@bourbonbros, that's BROS.TV. And as we always like to say, if your question doesn't suck, we may even answer it on a future show. And with all that out of the way, Ken, what do we have to drink tonight with episode 3?
Well, I'm excited for this one, and I couldn't resist because I finally was able to put my hands on the bottle, so I've already sampled this. But we're going with the Buffalo Trace this evening.
Ah, the Buffalo Trace. Now,
this is the Kentucky Straight Bourbon.
The Kentucky Straight Bourbon, which we had announced we would do on a prior show, and yet we were not able to do that on a prior show.
That's correct. I had to get very creative on how I procured this, but it's here, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, so we won't get into the details, but for those that may not be aware, we had announced we were going to do Buffalo Trace because we assumed it would be widely available. You could not find one in the state of PA.
Mm-mm. I could not.
And as of today, while you have one in your hand, there is still not one available for purchase in PA that you've been able to find. So as you said, you had to get very creative.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll leave it at that. But hey, you finally have it. We're finally doing the review, and I'm excited to dig into this one. This is kind of their flagship, what should be widely available bourbon out of Buffalo Trace. I think the only other bourbon we've done to date out of Buffalo Trace Distillery is the Eagle Rare, which you and I are both fans of.
Yeah, definitely.
So I know you couldn't resist. You already had to dip in and have a little taste of the Buffalo Trace, as have I. But let's go ahead and if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and put that bottle up to the mic and pop the cork so we can get that fantastic sound. There we go.
There it is.
And as we pour, I'll just go through some of the download of the basic facts on this one. Again, Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Generally, the price is about $25, which is pretty affordable. You may have had to get more creative. I'm not sure.
No, the price point was about the same. I did have to. There were some added costs. We'll leave it at that.
But it's about a $25 bottle of bourbon. It's classified as a straight bourbon. It is out of Buffalo Trace Distillery, parent company being Sazerac. Release date's ongoing. It's a 90 proof bourbon. There is no age statement, but Buffalo Trace says it's at least 8 years. The rumor is between 8 to 10.
Okay.
And they said it's not uncommon where it's usually about nine and a half years.
Okay. So we're not dealing with a real young bourbon.
No. And in fact, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people like about this is for $25, you're getting a bourbon that's been aged a decent amount of time, proper amount of time. And you'll also like this, Ken. The mash bill, While technically it's undisclosed, we don't know the exact mash bill, it is rumored to be a very high percentage of corn. And when I say high, up to 90% is rumored.
Wow. So that could explain the sweetness.
Yes. Yes. So we'll get into that in a minute with the tasting. But as I always like to do, let me give you the marketing speak. And we'll let our bourbon marinate here for a minute.
Okay. These are always good. This marketing, you know, speak here, the lingo. It's a creative.
Buffalo Trace Distillery will not let you down. This is a good one.
I'm ready.
All right.
Lay on me.
I encourage you to close your eyes and see through your mind's eye. Ancient buffalo carved paths through the wilderness that led American pioneers and explorers to new frontiers. One such trail led to the banks of the Kentucky River, where Buffalo Trace Distillery has been making bourbon whiskey the same way for more than 200 years. In tribute to the mighty buffalo and the rugged, independent spirit of the pioneers who followed them, we created our signature Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey.
I'm tearing up over here. That's great. It's beautiful.
I mean, if that doesn't make you feel American, I don't know what will.
Right. No. Well done.
I mean, you're literally drinking the American spirit in your glass.
That's great.
So the bar is high now. Okay. We've got big expectations, but let's give it a taste. I'm going to start with the nose.
As will I. That's going to be good.
Yeah, now you do get a little bit of that, I guess, stronger ethanol off the nose. But I also detect some of that sweetness that I'm expecting.
Yeah, I can sense that as well.
I don't know if it's a placebo effect or if there's actual sweetness on the nose, but my brain tells me this is going to be on the sweeter side.
Okay. Well, are you ready?
Let's do it. Let's raise a glass.
All right, to the mighty buffalo.
To the mighty buffalo. Cheers. I'm just going to say it, Ken. That's a very drinkable bourbon.
Very drinkable. What a lot of flavor. Really well rounded. Not too much burn. A taste of vanilla notes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little caramel.
Yeah, I would say that to me, this falls in line with what I would consider a very kind of quintessential classic bourbon flavor profile. You have that the oak and char with the sweetness from the corn. You get that, as you said, that vanilla and that caramel. It's, I don't know that I could pick it out in a blind taste test. But it would definitely be one of those where I just go, that is a classic American bourbon.
Agreed. Agreed. It's very, very well rounded. Like you said, drinkable. This could catch up with you. This could be dangerous.
Yeah, and at $25, it's not so good that I would be afraid to mix it in a cocktail, yet it's great as a sipping bourbon as well.
Yeah, I'll say.
So, as I'll give you an opportunity to enjoy the Buffalo Trace, because I can tell you like this one. So let me go through some of the fun facts that I was able to dig up in my research of Buffalo Trace. So we already know the iconic name comes from a historic road that was used by American bison to travel the salt-rich land of Kentucky to the Illinois prairies.
Mm-hmm.
The distillery has had a few names over the years. It was originally known as OFC, which stands for Old Fire Copper Distillery.
That's a great name, too.
Yeah. It was later, and for really the longest period, it was referred to as the George T. Stagg Company, which was named after its second owner. And then it was finally rechristened Buffalo Trace in 1999 after Sazerac bought it. And one of the things I like is Buffalo Trace actually puts out a bourbon called George T. Stagg. So as kind of an homage to the second owner that owned the distillery for the longest period of time, it's nice to see that that name lives on. Another important name on the Buffalo Trace roster is that of Elmer T. Lee. Does okay. that name ring a bell at all?
Vaguely.
So Elmer was almost not hired by Buffalo Trace, or this probably would have been when it was either OFC or George T. Stagg, I'm not sure which, but he became the first master distiller, and this is his big claim to fame, he's responsible for creating the first ever single barrel bourbon.
First ever, okay.
First ever, and that bourbon is still available today, which is the Blanton's single barrel.
That's probably where I've read about him then.
So this is because of Elmer T. Lee. And he is the one that ultimately introduced Americans to the concept of a premium bourbon.
Wow. Now, I do not yet have that in my collection. I will need to
dig out your wallet, my friend.
I'm in
dig
the market.
Dig out your wallet.
We'll see if I can get a good deal on it somewhere.
It's pretty wild as I kind of watch and track some of the different bourbons that I'm on the hunt for. There are parts of the country where people will say that they found a Blanton's or a Weller, bourbons that are hard to find in general. And when you do, they tend to be pretty pricey. And you'll find that people will oftentimes run across them and they'll be available at kind of the MSRP in that $60 range.
Mm-hmm.
And then other places, they're over $200. I think that bottle of Blanton's I found was about $125, and okay. I was just happy to be able to find it. But that's double what I've seen it elsewhere for, and half of what I've seen it in other places. So
same. Yeah, I've seen it double that easily.
It varies quite widely, and it makes you. It almost makes you want to buy one to have and one to just save as almost an investment. Because, again, these are all single barrels.
I agree with that approach completely. That's what I do with most every bottle I buy.
Well, and let's be frank, that's just so you don't have to open one.
Right. That's the illness that I have.
One for display, one for drinking, which, hey, I'm all for it. As long as we get to drink one, I still don't know if you're ever going to forgive me for making you open that Johnny Walker Blue.
Yeah, that's almost gone.
So we've got Elmer T. Lee to thank for the single barrel. Buffalo Trace is now a National Historic Landmark, which it received in 2013. And I love that they're one of the oldest continuously operating distilleries in America, literally distilling bourbon before Prohibition, during Prohibition, and after Prohibition.
Really?
Which is just amazing.
Yeah.
The distillery is rumored to be haunted.
Now, is this on the Bourbon Trail, if we ever make
it
out
there?
It is
on the Bourbon Trail, yes. This is on the list. This is on the list.
I'm ready to see a haunted distillery.
They also do the Taylor, E.H. Taylor bourbon, which is another one that's on my list that I've been looking for that's very hard to find. He was known as the father of the modern bourbon industry. And again, Buffalo Trace Distillery, in an homage to E.H. Taylor, have an E.H. Taylor bourbon that is supposed to be very good. And probably most well-known, the coveted bottle that everyone wants to get is what, Ken? If you're a bourbon drinker, what's the one bottle that everybody wants to have at some point in their life?
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot here. Give me a clue.
The Pappy.
Yeah, the Pappy Van Winkle. Yeah, of course. How'd I miss
that
one?
And that also comes out of Buffalo Trace.
That's terribly expensive.
Yes.
Now, it is
produced at the distillery under a joint venture with the Van Winkle family, but that is coming out of Buffalo Trace.
Wow. Now, if any of our listeners are, 15, 20 listeners at this point, if they have a connection for the Pappy Van Winkle, let us know, because I like to pick up a bottle of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. When you look at kind of the bourbons that are coveted by aficionados that everyone's out on the, kind of watching and on the hunt for. And I think about the ones that are on my short list. I want an E.H. Taylor. I want a Weller. I wanted a Blanton's. And all of these are coming out of Buffalo Trace Distillery. Yeah, and even Eagle Rare, which again, yeah, we did find, and we are fans of.
We are fans of that. We like it.
And we did the 10-year. I'd love to find an 18-year as well. There's just some really great bourbons coming out of Buffalo Trace, which is why it's an absolute must when we hit the trail.
I think a side effect of this show is going to be ratcheting our tolerance for spending, because things that we are tasting, they just keep getting better. And so we're just going to keep raising the bar.
Yes.
That's dangerous. That's dangerous.
It is dangerous. Yes. And again, because we have to drink it on this show, we can't even claim it, that it's for investment purposes.
Right.
Which I know you're not a fan of.
Right. No.
So yeah, those are just, a few of the fun facts, but, other than the Eagle Rare, I've not really had a chance to get much into the Buffalo Trace product offering, but I've been excited to try this because, again, this one kind of fits in with the Bullets, Woodford Reserves, you know, those other kind of more entry point priced bourbons that are above, that are kind of widely available, and Buffalo Trace fits that bill. And I would say this one gives those a run for their money.
Yeah, I can see why. This is great. I'm gonna have to top it off again already. This is really, really good. So I had a question for you. You mentioned that in the summary that the distillery's been around for over 200 years, mm-hmm. right? And yep. You know, doing my math and trying to recall history, there was Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you mentioned before and during. And after, how do they get away with manufacturing during Prohibition?
That, my friend, is a fine question. And one that did require a little investigating, because I had the same question. And I initially thought, like, were they just bootlegging, and because Prohibition's over, they're now just admitting it? No, they were legally distilling bourbon during Prohibition. And so, yes, how is that possible? So Prohibition closed down almost every alcohol producer in the country.
Right.
Except for a small number, a select few. And Buffalo Trace.
Doesn't make sense.
Was one of only four. Buffalo Trace was one of only four distilleries allowed to remain open.
Did they pay someone off? How did this happen?
So here's what happened. A small number, in this case, four distilleries like Buffalo Trace, which was George T. Stagg back then, were allowed to stay open to make, Ken, medicinal whiskey.
Oh, for the love of God. Are you serious?
Because this was back in the day where booze was medicine. And our wonderful quack doctors back in the day would write prescriptions for whiskey to cure what ails you. Fevers, colds, boredom.
So what, now I have a question. Like, would my HMO cover it at the time? I mean, this is great. I can go get a prescription right now. Maybe I can get the Blanton's. There's no substitution, right? I must have the Blanton's.
And as you remember, you know, it used to be that Coca-Cola had cocaine in it.
Yeah, and I do recall that.
Uh-huh. And that fell into the medicinal prescription-oriented benefits of things you could get from a doctor. And so, you know, if you didn't want to have to get the secret knock to your local speakeasy, you just had to know a doctor that would write you a prescription. And then you could get yourself some Buffalo Trace.
No generics. It must be authentic.
Must be authentic. So because they were one of the four distilleries selected to produce medicinal whiskey.
Wow.
They have been open and distilling for over 200 years.
Wow. Very interesting. Great research. I'll have to dig into that myself and see if I can find the other three.
And as far as whether or not your HMO covers it, that remains to be seen, but
yeah, well, that'll take a lot of research to figure that one out,
but very interesting indeed. All right, Ken, let's get into tonight's discussion of Sons of Anarchy Season 2, Episode 3, titled Fix.
Let's do it. I watched it again last night just because I was entertained by this one. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, IMDb score of 8.2. It's a strong episode. Now, this one was released, Ken, back in September 22nd, 2009.
I feel old.
It was written by Dave Erickson, and I agree with you. Very entertaining episode.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode, remind me what that was. That was a...
It's basically the aftermath of Gemma's rape. Yeah,
right. Last one was Small Terrors. That was also rated an 8.2, if I wasn't mistaken.
It was. I think for a totally different reason, though.
Yeah, it has to be totally different, because this one was a little lighter. There's more comedy involved. I was just entertained more. It wasn't as heavy, maybe. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, and I have to imagine this was intentional by Kurt Sutter. The first two episodes were pretty heavy. They were great, but very dramatic. And about the time where you're really feeling the weight of these first two episodes, we get episode 3, and they bring the funny.
Yeah. No. It was good.
All right. So let's go through a quick synopsis for anybody that might be living under a rock and hasn't actually watched this episode yet. Jackson Tara's romantic day off is interrupted by a phone call from Luann and a field trip to a porn studio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Clay and Gemma also decide they want to visit the porn studio, and things do not go well for them.
No.
There's broken glass. We'll get into it. Bobby figures out that Luann has been skimming on payments to the club for years, and that prompts Luann to come up with a plan to, we'll just say, make things right.
Mm-hmm.
Ima, one of Luann's starlets, decides she wants Jax and tries to push Tara out. And we'll talk about what happens with that. Opie and Halfsack discover that the Nords are selling meth in Charming and extract a location from the local dealer. And when Hale fails the test set by Clay, he turns a blind eye to the meth lab. Sam Crow decides to take matters into their own hands.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ken, I know you already shared your overall thoughts of the episode. You liked it. I liked it. Let's start digging in. Did we have any new characters introduced in this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we have new characters, but the one that jumped out at me was Ima. She, as you mentioned her, she is an actress at the Cara Cara.
Yes, and, it was technically introduced in the last episode, but we failed to mention it.
Right, but she served a lesser role. Like, she wasn't as prominent in the storyline then as she is now.
Yes,
right?
and what is Ima's full name, Ken?
I don't know that I remembered that. What's the last name?
I call bullshit.
Well, help me understand.
You know it. You just won't say it.
Just help All me right. understand.
So Ima has a porn name, and her porn name is
like cinnamon. Cinnamon.
Ima Tight. That is her full name.
Very creative. Very creative. Okay, I might have heard that before.
So yes, I'm just going to say Ima from now on. But yes, Ima was technically introduced in the last episode, and we both failed to capture the fact that she is a recurring character, so we'll catch up with that now. And what is the actress that plays Ima?
Her name's Kristen Renton.
That's right, Kristen Renton. And she does a great job.
She does. And she's in a lot of other things that are more recent, but this was early on in her career.
Yes. And... I'm going to leave it there. We'll put a pen in it, but there's some interesting things to kind of break down with regards to this Ima, Tara, and Jax storyline.
Yes, there is. There is.
All right. So just to kind of tee up the major storylines for this episode, our kind of main storyline is Ethan Zobel pushes Darby and the Nord to sell drugs in Charming, And mm-hmm. this is part of his continuing effort to push Clay and Sam Crow out of power and out of favor with the local residents of Charming.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Bobby Elvis, who is going through Luann's books and discovers that she has two sets of books and is skimming off the top of Cara Cara.
Right.
We have Gemma, who continues to kind of quietly suffer from the PTSD resulting from the rape in episode one of mm-hmm. season two. And then kind of tied to storyline A, we have the club that is determined to find and destroy the Nordsmith Lab.
Right.
Anything you think I missed there?
No, that's a great summary.
All right. Well, let's just dive right in. I'll let you kick things off. Give me kind of one of your favorite moments you want to start with.
Well, as always, I mean, we're going to get this, I think, moving forward here. We're going to get this opening and closing. I'll associate that with what I recall from Vanna White. What's the name of that?
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, Wheel of Fortune. You know how they've kind of changed to where they always give you the R-S-T-L-N-E, and then you pick other characters there. This is a lot. We're always going to get the cold open. We're always going to get the fade to black. Would you agree with that?
We probably should have mentioned this in season two, episode one. That would have been more timely, but let's do it now. What you're basically saying is from here on out, we're likely going to start with the cold open and finish with the fade to black.
I think so. I think we should just get that out there now, because otherwise we're going to sound like it's original and it's not.
Fair enough. And okay. Generally we try to pick kind of, you pick five and I pick five for a total of 10. What we're really saying is we're always going to start with the cold open. We're probably always going to end with fade to black. So there's basically four others for you and four others for me. There's eight more in between. All right.
That's fair. I mean, that's my observation.
I mean, that's the way it's been working out.
Yeah.
Frankly.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. That's my observation here.
I think you're spot on. So, all right. So with that in mind, Ken, mm-hmm. kick us off with the cold open.
I think it's always a good episode. You know, it's always going to be episode when you get Bobby Elvis opening.
Very true. This is kind of the way they announce there's going to be some funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well put. He opens. He's at a bar mitzvah. And
which is even better.
He's doing his thing. He's a side hustle for him.
Yeah, this isn't Vegas. This is some little private party.
Yeah, someone's paid him to impersonate Elvis, and he does a great job, as always.
Gives it his all.
But, you know, in the cold open, after the bar mitzvah, he's not quite a happy guy. And Clay notices that he's sad Elvis, so to speak.
Yes. Right? Yep.
Clay works out that gives him a different assignment, right?
Yeah, so just to kind of frame this up. So Bobby is working bar mitzvahs and pretty much anything he can find, because while he was locked up mm-hmm. for the murder, he wasn't earning.
Sure.
And he has alimony and child support and bills. And so he's trying to catch up.
Right. He's trying
and
to
so
earn.
So Clay throws him a bone.
Yeah, he throws him a bone. I mean, he's healing because he got wounded in the last episode. His shoulders.
That's right. He
up.
Got shot. Like, it's been a tough road for Bobby in the last few weeks.
He needs a posh role. Like, he needs something that's simple, something he can really just lay low and kind of get into. And this is Clay gives him this task to be the bookkeeper at Cara Cara.
Yeah, if Bobby was a cop, this would be him getting a desk job.
Yeah, perfect, totally. So in that opening scene again, the cold open, Gemma, you see that Clay wakes up, notices that Gemma's not there. She's kind of in the kitchen, kind of chopping flowers, and she's to put in an arrangement, but she's not really just chopping them lightly. She has taken out her aggression on those flowers.
Very aggressive, Ken. Very aggressive. Yeah, you don't want any fingers near the stems of those flowers.
Absolutely not. But also during the opening, you see that Chibs and Juice are enjoying the show at Cara Cara.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I had the opportunity to go back and watch this. And wow, very uncomfortable.
You want to take us play by play through this one, Ken?
I want to stay at the 10,000 foot view because I think it's more appropriate.
Good call.
But there's a scene there where Is it Ima? Is it Ima in it?
No.
No,
no,
it's not.
It's not.
Who is that? Is it Layla?
It's Layla.
It's Layla in it. But they're, I don't know, taking advantage of a poor soul. And as I recall, she drinks the tequila or whatever beverage they're drinking, and they use the bottle and they insert it somewhere that is very inappropriate.
Yes. I think that gives enough for people to connect the dots.
That's enough color commentary, isn't it?
Yeah. We don't have to go into more than that. But let's just say, if we were watching the movie Fletch.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
It would have been Moon River.
Fletch. You're going way back in the vault with that one. Wow. I had forgotten that even existed.
Now, what was interesting about this cold open, Ken, and you're right, the cold opens, we've talked about them for weeks now. Mm-hmm. They're such a big part of how the show starts. This one was 35 seconds.
Well, usually they can be like 5 to 7 minutes sometimes.
I know it. I was surprised at how short it was. And you get all of that in 35 seconds.
Wow. I didn't even clock it. Maybe I should bring out my stopwatch next time, but I didn't.
Well, but you mentioned Jim and the flowers. Let's just roll right into Jim's PTSD.
Sure. I'm going to have a little more Buffalo Trace to wrap up.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
Okay. Pour away. Right. So as you said, Clay wakes up. Jim is not in bed. And later it cuts to them at the table, right? They're having coffee. And you can, and the tough part of this scene is Clay does not know what Gemma has gone through, right?
Yeah, I mean, the whole episode, he does not know.
That's right. So as far as Clay's concerned, she was in a car accident.
Yeah.
And yeah, the car got beat up and she had to go to the hospital, but she's okay now.
Yeah, get over it.
And that's right. And so he has a rather kind of flippant attitude to it because it's quote unquote just a minor car accident.
Yeah.
And yet Jim is dealing with all of this trauma of what's actually happened. She's not shared any of that with Clay. And so this just sets up a major drama between the two of them, because a car accident should not lead to a fear of intimacy.
No.
Which is exactly what's happening. And so for Clay, it's just this big question mark of what the hell is going on.
Right.
And Jim is not sharing anything.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And I had I was able to watch the episode after this, which we'll talk about later, but this is something that builds.
And yes.
Yeah, he's totally clueless. He's in the right here, because he might have a completely different attitude if he really knew what was happening.
Oh, I'm sure he would. Absolutely. And you see this play out throughout the episode. And let's just say at this point, things don't get better.
No.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. They don't.
I actually liked a couple of moments. Again, the injection of humor when Gemma basically leaves because she doesn't want to have the conversation.
Right.
And all that's left is Clay and Gemma's bird.
I'm trying to talk to you here.
Since when do you want to talk?
He throws something at the bird because he's just so disgusted. You've got Unser later at the garage, who is so gentle and kind because he knows, and he's trying to help Gemma. And you can just see Gemma, like, her instinct is to put up a wall and act like nothing's wrong.
Right.
And then the moment you see her put up that wall, Tig walks in and just scares the shit out of her.
Oh, shit.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Here's the repo list. Why don't you get half second op started on it?
Yeah, sure.
Which is just a great way of communicating to the audience. She's not okay.
Right. She's not.
And then the kind of argument and fight between Clay and Gemma that started at home now continues at Teller Motors.
Yep.
And my favorite part of all of this is when, you know, Gemma takes off and heads to Cara Cara, and Clay's pissed off and kind of storms off. It cuts to Tig, and Tig just says,
"I hate it when mommy and daddy fight."
I remember that. I do remember that.
And then things go to the porn studio and really go off the rails.
Wow.
And you can see in this scene, like, you have, you know, Clay and Gemma are there, Tara's there, then eventually Jax comes out, and all of this is unfolding, and you just see how, like, everybody can kind of sense that this isn't right. Like, this is not normal. Right? You see it in Jack's eyes. You see it in it, Tara knows.
Yeah, she knows.
She understands.
She knows.
But for Jax and Clay,
she's one of the only ones that doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah. And so you can feel Tara and her pain of knowing what Gemma's going through. But then you've got Clay and Jax sitting there going, like, what is going on?
Right. They took that cinder block and threw it through that the window of the...
Yeah, Clay's had it.
Yeah, he's done. Yeah, he totally destroyed his own window.
Like, he's just going to have to pay to fix it.
That's great.
And then he goes to touch her, and of course Gemma freaks out, because, right, that whole sense of being touched and intimacy... And that's where it's like, it seems like an overreaction.
Right. It's definitely on public display there. And it went from bad to worse.
And this is one of the things, you know, we talked about how Tig's character is so layered, and there are things that he does that endears you to him, and there are things that he does that just make you say, what a freak. And there are things that he does where you just go, I'm not on board with that. Like, he's just sociopathic. But in this episode, he's the one that is telling Clay, go talk to her, fix this, hatch things up.
He did. Such a great character. I love Tate's character.
It's so good. It's so good. So, yeah, I loved that as kind of a thread that was woven through this entire episode. And again, it's all tied to that first episode, which is so incredibly hard to watch. And episode two was really the aftermath of that, and still brought the heavy. This is certainly not light, but we're seeing the evolution of what has happened from episode one. It's not over yet, but you can really feel a sense that Jim is not going to be able to hide this.
No.
She's cracking at the seams, and people are starting to figure out there's more to the story.
Right.
Which brings us back to Zobel. So, Ken, what do you got for us next?
Yeah, so Bell, like, so he's rolling into town. He's opening his cigar shop, which is really just a front for his white power.
Yep.
I'm gonna sell drugs and charming and take over charming, right?
Yep.
Well, he approaches Hale in this episode and kind of lays out a plan to kind of bury Sam Crow. So he proposes allowing, and Hale is always been above board.
He's by the book.
By the book. Doesn't really like the relationship that Unser has with the club. But he's talking to Zobel. Zobel throws out, hey, how about we want to sell drugs in Charming.
Temporarily,
right. He said,
are you talking about deliberately bringing drugs into my town?
I'm talking about creating a temporary problem that allows you to flush out the permanent one.
So he wants Hale, essentially, or the law, to allow them to flood Charming with drugs. And
yes. It's
always been something that isn't allowed, or that those in Charming that know about Sam Crow have always just accepted, because they know that one thing that Sam Crow is all about is not allowing drugs and charming.
That's
so right. This kind of goes against the grain there, and that's what Zobel wants to capitalize on.
That's right, because if Sam Crow is no longer providing the benefits that they're used to,
then they fall.
We don't need you here.
Right, they fall in the public eye at that point.
That's right, and Zobel knows that and is exploiting that, or trying to.
So Hale, like, he doesn't really agree with it completely, but he kind of accepts it.
Yeah, and my big takeaway from this is this to me shows you why Ethan Zobel has been successful. You see his persuasiveness. He has taken someone that is straight-laced by the book and has gotten him to entertain the idea of allowing them to sell meth in Charming for the benefit of a greater good.
Yeah, well, wow. I mean, and he falls for it. He allows it. Like, they're going to open a full-on lab, Breaking Bad style, in Charming.
That's right.
So,
and he's going to turn a blind eye. Hale.
He's supposed to. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. We'll talk about that later. But this is what is being proposed, and that was a kind of a key plot builder for this episode, in my opinion.
So let's stay with that, and we'll go into... There's kind of two parts to this. There's what I call Crack is Back. And then the one that you mentioned that I love is Got Milk.
Oh, yeah.
I'll let you share that one.
Okay. Let me know when I go in on that one.
All right. So the Crack is Back is really what you were just saying, which is Zobel is bringing crack and meth back into Charming, and they're selling directly in Charming through the Nords. And Opie and Half Sack are doing repos for Teller Motors, and in the course of these repos, they see a drug deal going down.
That's right. They're there to help repossess cars and things, right?
Right.
And they're there, and Opie sees it off in the distance that there's someone selling drugs in the corner over there. And
he knows it's the Nords, and he knows that is a violation.
That definite violation. And he's ready to throw down, because that's kind of Opie's mental state at this point.
Right. He seeks confrontation at this point.
He does. He seeks it. He seeks it out.
So he immediately he and Afsat go back, they put their cuts on, and they're ready to stop what is going on. And the drug dealer, not intimidated.
Fellas got a need?
Need for you to take your shit somewhere else. No one deals in Charming.
Why no one?
Lot of reinforcement.
But Half Sack's like, hold up. I'm not...
Because Opie doesn't care, right? He's one against many and does not care.
Right.
And so what does Half Sack do?
Well, he stops him. He says, I'm great with a crowbar, but I'm not very good at deflecting bullets. So he pulls him aside, and Opie agrees. They got to get some reinforcement here, and they kind of pause it at that point.
Yeah, and you see kind of Opie's reaction is like, I guess that's a valid point. It kind of reluctantly turns around and leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
So they do call for reinforcements, which includes Juice, Chibs, and Tig.
Yes, it does.
And Juice does a great job as posing as a tweaker.
Got a need, brother?
Yeah, you got a 40-pack.
Hey, yo, relax.
Yeah, my foreman sees me. I'm screwed, man. Hey, yo, over here. This ain't that Mexican shit, right?
I'm all about Made in America.
Everyone's there. So he pulls him aside.
The dealer finally is intimidated.
And he gives up the location of the crack house at that point, right?
That's right. That's right. Speaking of the
crack house, there was a scene where, and it was very short.
Got milk.
That's where we're going.
Go for it.
I mean, I don't know if anyone really noticed that. But
I didn't until you brought it up. I had not noticed it. So
you didn't,
take
really?
It, Ken. Got milk.
Well, Darby walks out of this meth lab And you don't see what's going on inside. You never see what's going on inside. But he walks out of the house. He's got a respirator on. He pulls it off. And
right.
He walks
out. You can clearly tell what's going on, yeah, even though you don't see what's going on.
Yeah, you know, there's no innocence here. But he's got a beverage in his hand. It's milk. It's like, I don't know a percent, but it's like milk. I don't know if it's vitamin D or if it's 2%. It doesn't matter. It's white. Okay? And he just takes a swig of it. So even his beverages are biased, right? They're wow.
Which takes us back to season 2, episode 1, which was titled what?
Refresh my memory. It's
albification.
Albification, right.
Which,
that's right.
It's the definition white. Of albification is?
Is white.
Turning things white.
Turning things white. So that, what a perfect beverage of choice. I don't know, aside from horchata or anything else that might be white. But
I did not pick up on it. You did. I have to assume this was not coincidence.
No, this was written in.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And so that brings us to the final point of kind of the front half of the episode.
Right.
Which, Ken, I'll let you take this one too. Jump in. Take us on.
The club business. There's always a moment where there's club business going on, right?
Absolutely. Generally around church.
Yes, generally around church. But there's a meeting in the warehouse when Juice and Jax tell Clay about Ethan's past. Do you remember this?
Yeah, and this is where, again, I think Jax is the one that really brings the insightful data.
Right. Well, they break down the fact that Bobby's been assigned to Caracara, and he's going to be the one doing the books there. And Tig looked visually upset that he got that gig.
If there's anyone that wants to be at Caracara, it's Tig.
Right. Right.
That's the closest to a dream job for Tig.
Yes, it is. So Jax has to, if I recall, Jax has to escort Ima. Is that when he does that, or is
yeah?
That later?
So because Sam Crow's in partnership with Luann. Luann has basically said that Ima is one of their like top stars.
Yeah, she's a top starlet, and they have to keep her happy.
And remember from episode 2, they had Georgie trying to muscle
mm-hmm.
in,
mm-hmm.
and so this is kind of the continuation of that. And so this is Jax providing protection for Ima, so that Georgie and his crew don't try to rough her up the way they did Layla. Is that who it was?
Yeah. Yeah. Layla. Exactly. Layla. So yeah, she's, I'm a tight. So that's her name. She's very concerned with what Georgie did to Layla. So she wants yes. to make sure that at her call that she will be escorted from Caracara home safely to Teller Motors. And
all of this, quite frankly, it's pretty obvious. It's a ruse for her to get close and spend time
oh,
with
yeah,
Jax.
Oh, yeah, it's obvious. There's a party brewing. Like, she wants to take Jax to the party. And yeah, it's...
She's making her move.
You can feel it.
Yeah, so Jax heads over to Caracara and first spends a little bit of time with Bobby.
Right, right. And Bobby lets him know what's going on there, right?
Yeah, Bobby's always that one that's kind of checking in, how are you doing, and kind of being that consolary between Clay and the rest of the club. And he's worried about this tension
totally.
That's brewing between Jax and Clay.
And he's done that before, but he's very concerned. He lays it out. And he says that, look, you know, everyone's seeing what's going on between you and Clay. And yep. this is another topic, a storyline that kind of continues, and it's dragging me down anyway. It's getting a little bit old, but just the tension, the fighting between Clay and Jax, that it's not going away. It's here for a while.
No, what I do like about this scene, if we remember back to the way that season 1 ended, is the reason you have all of this tension is because Jax knows that Clay
is responsible.
Tried to have Opie
yeah.
hit.
He knows.
Right?
He knows.
And he's responsible for Donna's death.
Yep.
But no one else, right, in terms of what Jax knows, no one else other than Piney knows that.
Right.
Right? So he is naturally downplaying the issues to Bobby. But remember, Bobby knows.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Bobby doesn't know that Jax knows. And Jax doesn't know that Bobby knows. But both of them know.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Which I find fascinating. Right. Right.
So Bobby has a cigarette, an unlit cigarette in his mouth. And Jax comes in and sits down. And Jack pulls out a joint. Right?
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? I mean, I don't know that I would, but he did. But, yeah, he's sitting there and, you know, Bobby's telling him, hey, we're concerned. The club's concerned. And they share that joint. Now, Bobby...
Suddenly the cigarette doesn't matter.
The cigarette's gone. But I was watching that going, that's an unlit cigarette. It's in his mouth. Like, what's going to happen with it? Are you going to light it? What are you going to do with that? I was very focused on that cigarette, John.
You more than I, apparently, because I don't remember.
I was very focused on that.
But what does Jax ultimately tell Bobby?
I don't know. Help me out.
Father and son shit. It's all good. Right? Well, he deflects.
That's a concern. That's a concern that Bobby expresses multiple times, is that I don't want to get too far into the next episode, but you got to get right with your father-son stuff that's going on
here. Yep. All right, Ken. Let's get into the back half of the episode. I want to kick things off with what I refer to as becoming an old lady.
Yes.
And this is where Gemma, I think, starts to turn the corner, accept Tara a little bit, and starts to mentor her a little bit on what she needs to do to be an old lady for Jax.
Right. I think the next episode is where she really, it's like an epiphany. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But this
keep
is kind
a pin
of
a, in that. We don't want to give anything away.
It's a build up to that.
It's not accidental that I referred to this as becoming an old lady.
Okay. All right.
So the scene I'm referring to specifically, and I want to get you to weigh in here, is when Jax gives our good friend Ima a ride back to Teller Motors.
Yes.
And does not realize it, but Tara is in the office with Gemma, and you see Ima being, let's just say, very friendly with Jax.
Very friendly. It's a little bit further than I thought Jax would go with this, actually, but...
Yeah, he doesn't exactly rebuff.
No.
Like, he kind of leans into it more than you would think.
Yeah, a little bit.
And you've got Gemma basically asking Tara if she's okay with that.
You good with that rubbing on Jax?
I trust him.
And then ultimately, you have Tara, who I contend this is where Tara is wrestling with the doctor and surgeon Tara,
yeah,
and the old lady Tara.
Yeah.
Because Gemma is very much in that mindset of, you need to teach Ima a lesson and make sure she knows Jax is off limits.
Yeah.
And Tara is a respectable, upstanding citizen and doctor that doesn't just go get in a cat fight because somebody has made an advance at her guy.
Right. She said her cat fighting days are behind her, right?
I'm not 18 years old anymore, Gemma. My cat fighting days are behind me.
And I love Gemma's response to that. She just kind of smiles at her and says,
we'll see.
So I love that scene. And again, this is kind of an ongoing thread that continues to build through the episode and will ultimately take us to the fade to black. But let's keep things moving, Ken. What do you got for us next?
I don't know. The church scenes are always good to me.
You are always a fan of church. I'll give you that.
Yeah, the strategy is being developed. They come around the table and they kind of laid out that they found the meth lab.
Yes. Right?
They found the location of the meth lab.
And Tig, and our good friend Tig.
Yeah, he wants to like, I'm ready to go in. I want to blow stuff up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's his MO.
He's hot to trot.
Right. And Jax is really concerned about not making a mess in their own backyard. He wants to keep it on the low down low, whatever you want to say. I don't know what's PC in this day and age, but he wants to let law enforcement handle it.
Right, which would make sense, right? Like, law enforcement wouldn't want a meth lab any more than they do.
No,
like, give them the intel and let them go shut it down.
Sure.
Like, Sam Crow doesn't need to be involved at all. Why risk Sam Crow getting involved in a crime? They can just let law enforcement do it.
Right. But this is where the strategy really happens. Because they don't really know whether Hale is on the, like, whether he's in their pocket or not. They don't want to tell Hale, or Unser, rather. They want to tell Hale and kind of see what develops. They want to throw it in there and see whether they can prove that Hale is on the take or in with them, in alignment with the Norris or not.
Yeah, and I got to give Clay credit. Like, this is smart on his part to test Hale.
Well, they want to test Hale, but at the same time, Clay goes and tells Unser anyway.
Well, and I think this is smart too, because with Unser knowing, he's able to go and ask Hale.
He can keep an eye on it. Like, he tells them what's going on, what they think is going on, but they give it to Unser and let him know that, hey, you look. Like,
that's right.
We're watching. You watch.
That's right.
And I think it will save
the outcome for later.
Yeah.
But yes.
Right. Right.
So essentially, this gets into what I refer to as trust but verify. Right. So they are going to give it to law enforcement.
Well put.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to see whether law enforcement actually takes and handles it or not, because if Hale doesn't, it implies that he's in Zobel's pocket.
It's very obvious at that point.
Which Jax does not believe there is any possibility.
Yeah, he thinks there's no way, because he's so by the book.
Straight laced by the book. Yep, absolutely. And again, Clay goes with the trust and verify, and we'll leave it at that because we'll find out later.
Right. Well, let's move on to the next one. What's your next point?
All right. So I'm actually going to lean on you for this, because I know in our discussions prior to recording, this is one of the ones that I know you hit on as well, and I thought you had some great comments on it. I'm just going to refer to it as the prison clause.
Oh, yeah.
So as you talked about earlier, I think we get this in the cold open. Bobby Elvis is on hard times after being released from prison. He's trying to catch up on his financial obligations.
He is, yep.
Clay knows that Bobby is a strong supporter of Sam Crow. He's been a great consigliere to Clay. And so Clay throws him a bone and says, let's give you a cushy desk job. Head over to the Caracara, cook the books. We're going to add you to the payroll, and you'll get some steady income from Caracara.
Yeah.
No discussion with Luann, by the way, on this.
No.
This is just decided by Clay.
Sure. No discussion with anyone, actually. Just
that's right. Mm-hmm. So Bobby goes and does that. Luann's not happy. Jack settles things down with Luann. Bobby's now there.
Sure.
Bobby, what does he say? His dad ran books for the mob?
Yeah, the mob.
You pulling me off the set.
Did you know that my old man was a bookkeeper for the mob in Reno?
Jesus Christ. I'm in the middle.
Italians paid him a lot of money. You know why? Handled two sets of books.
Bobby understands creative bookkeeping.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great call out. You know, the mob. Like, great resume there, right? Bobby and his family. That's great. Like,
yes.
That qualifies him for doing the books.
But he does know enough to discover that Luann's running two sets of books.
Yep.
And she's skimming, which means that the amount of money that's been going to the club is less than it should be.
Sure. We'll leave it at that. Yeah, that's the takeaway.
And what's interesting about this is, generally speaking, if you find that somebody is basically stealing and lying to the club and not giving the club what they're actually owed, penalty of death is not out of the question.
Well, yeah, as we've seen, I mean, this is like, that's obvious, right? She's gone.
Yeah, this is a pretty...
It's a big offense. Big offense.
Big offense.
Yeah. Yes. So she's, Luann's like frazzled by this. She's hit by that.
And Bobby knows, like, as being Otto's old lady, she's been around the block. She knows what this means.
So Bobby's like, look, this is a club vote. Nothing to do with me. I found this, but like, it's a club vote.
I think he says this is a club decision.
Club decision, right.
So Luann.
Yeah, Luann.
Decides that she needs to find an alternative solution in a hurry.
Definitely.
And what is her decision, Ken?
Well, how do you put this? So her decision is to come on to Bobby and throw out her services. And she has a resume.
Yes.
With Cara Cara.
She's, in apparently she's skilled.
She has some skills of such. And she throws out her services to him.
And Bobby initially is not opposed, but Luann's Otto's old lady.
Yeah, and he says that. You're Otto's old lady. Like, and she informs him that there's a prison clause.
Look, Luann, you're Otto's old lady.
Yeah. But there's a prison clause.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting, and we kind of get a sense of where things are headed, but you don't really know at this point because it cuts to another scene.
And even watching this episode to the very end, I don't know that Bobby took advantage of that.
I do.
You do, like, how?
Because we'll talk about it in the fade to black.
Okay, we'll stop there, but I don't know. I'm not convinced.
We're going to revisit this in the fade to black.
All right.
So, yeah, let's leave it there for now. But, yes, this is Luann's solution. She's going to trade, let's just say, sexual favors for Bobby Silence.
Yeah. Yeah, leave it at that.
All right. So, Ken, before we get into the fade to black, give me one more. Give me one more moment.
I think something that jumped out to me, and it may go back to the last episode as well, but Opie, he's displaying a definite death wish.
Ah, good choice of words.
So, in the last episode, as you recall, he walked into the line of fire with the gun battle, with the gun exchange with the Mayans.
Fantastic cinematic moment.
He didn't care. He's going out after him, and he's not trying to deflect anything. He doesn't care. If he gets hit, he gets hit. That's what it seems like.
Yep.
So
luckily, the Mayans apparently were not very good shots.
No, it's in the script somewhere. But yeah, he comes out in the clear. But in this episode, they find the location of the meth lab. The club surrounds the meth lab. They see what's going on inside. They surround it. There's gunfire into the windows. They enter the meth lab. Everyone flees. They get in their truck and split. Their job now is to destroy the meth lab. And everyone's watching, and Opie's the one to set off the explosives that destroy the meth lab, but he doesn't do it.
And everyone's assuming that it's going to be a remote detonation.
There's going to be some, time that transpires between igniting the explosives.
Yeah, you set up the explosives, you then go to safety. Sure. And then using an antenna and a remote and a button,
you set that
off at a safe distance.
Sure.
Opie has other plans.
He has other plans. And so, I don't know. It reminds me of an old episode of cartoons on Saturday morning with TNT. What was that, TNT?
Oh, yeah.
Wile E. Coyote,
the Roadrunner.
Yeah, there wasn't enough time there between the... Anyway, he comes running out of the house.
He's got the remote. Hope's not using one.
An obvious death wish. He doesn't really care the ramifications of what he's done.
Yes.
The club notices it.
The club notices, and we as viewers, I think, realize that this is Opie being in that stage of mourning from Donna's death, where he doesn't care whether he lives or dies.
Right. Doesn't care.
Right.
Yep.
And so it's not that he's trying to die. He just doesn't care.
Right. Yep. So it all happens. It explodes. He falls on the ground. You know, and then it transitions to the fade of black. So take us into that.
All right. I'm going to take you home, Ken.
Man.
So much here.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got... So I'm going to talk about the fade to black, kind of that the opening of the closing scene really starts with Bobby walking out of Luann's office.
Yeah, okay. True. Yep.
All right. So going back to your question, we basically leave with Bobby and Luann in the office, and we don't know what happens. And as you said, you don't know for sure what's transpired. But when we cut to this scene and Bobby is walking out of the office, the guy can barely walk.
Yeah, I guess I caught that.
And you see him and the way he acts and the way he is kind of walking out of the office, like he's trying to shake it off.
His swagger.
He's been in it for a while. Right. And it's very evident that this is not just him getting up from the desk and a little stiff back. Like he's been involved in some things that are taking its toll physically.
All right. Well, I mean, I didn't catch that, but I'll take your word for it. I'll go back and watch
it. If you go back and watch it, definitely just go to the fade to black. And to me, it's very obvious, but well, you be the judge. We've got Jax, who does confront Opie, right? Which is why I said, I like your choice of words. He basically starts to ask Opie and probe, and Opie says point blank, I don't have a death wish.
Yeah, he said that.
And Jax doesn't necessarily believe him. And what I liked about Jax being a friend here, he doesn't push it, right? It doesn't get confrontational. But Jax reminds Opie, in probably the best way that a good friend can, you may not have Donna, but you still have two kids. And you're now the only parent, and you need to be here for them.
Yeah.
And then I think the main part of this fade to black is what has been building all episode. And it is kind of the episode of the week storyline, which is Ima and her efforts to muscle in on and get in between Jax and Tara.
Sure.
And you hinted at it. We won't give it away, but this kind of sets up Tara's storyline for the next episode. Like Tara has to make a decision.
Yep.
Right. And this goes back to Gemma mentoring Tara and trying to help her navigate these waters. But Tara shows up and let's just say Ima is not very welcoming.
This is a closed party. I'm looking for Jax. Honey, he's got all he can handle tonight, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
I said, get out.
And all of Ima's, I guess we could generously call them co-stars?
Yeah, co-stars. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Have Ima's back. And Tara realizes, number one, she's outnumbered. Number two, she doesn't want to cause a scene. And number three, she doesn't want to go to jail. And she's a doctor, and she's going to take the high road.
Yep.
But at the same time, she's pissed. So she goes into the restroom. Opie actually sees this, tells Jax.
There's an exchange.
Jax knows it's a problem.
There's an exchange going on there at the entrance where she's... They're heated between.
That's right. Heated. And Tara and decides to remove herself and go to the restroom.
Sure.
Which Jax, because Opie has alerted him, follows her into the restroom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And discovers Tara's not happy.
Nope.
Now, the one thing I'll say, and I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, Jax could have shut this down a lot earlier in the episode. He's somewhat played into this and made this a bigger deal than it needed to be.
Right.
Would you agree?
I'd agree.
And if I was Tara, I'd be pretty upset with Jax. But really, Tara's more upset with herself and wrestling with this, am I going to be an old lady or am I going to be a fine upstanding doctor that doesn't beat the shit out of a woman that hits on my boyfriend?
Sure.
And she's wrestling with that. And that leads to... How should we frame this? Jax and Tara are in the restroom. Tara's upset with Jax.
Be careful. And, be careful here.
And that turns into... How about we just say... That turns into passion.
Yeah. Great. Well put.
All right. So we'll leave it there. I think everybody can connect the dots. And so they decide that they need to... Or Tara decides... She needs to act on those feelings right here and now in the restroom.
Right. Now, hold up. Time out. Is this a PG recording episode or is this R or somewhere in between?
So technically it's R. We can say whatever we want.
Okay.
However, I have learned that my parents are watching. So
yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Be careful where you go then, by all means.
So I'm just going to say that Tara's frustrated. That leads to some passionate frustrations that she must act on right here and now.
Okay.
And so they decide to do that in the restroom.
In the restroom, okay.
And Ima eventually walks in to discover...
She does.
These... passions that needed to be acted on in that moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Tara makes eye contact with Ima. And
that was it. That's it right there.
You basically get a little smile from Tara at the end that says, I win.
That's it. Yep. I win.
And you see Ima's expression, and I would say Tara was right. Ima has that look of, I lost.
She's defeated. She leaves.
That's right. And fade to black.
There it is.
So that wraps up episode 3, which then leads us into episode 4, obviously, titled Eureka.
Yes.
So Ken, well, let's obviously not dive into Eureka, but you've seen the episode, as have I.
Sure.
Why would somebody want to tune in next week?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tee this up. We're going to dive into the yellow corn.
Oh.
Mellow corn. I'm sorry. Mellow corn.
The mellow corn.
Now, this
such
is
such a handsome looking bottle.
It is.
This,
I'm like, I have no expectations. Zero. This is Bottled and Bond, which looks great. Like,
yep, I'm gonna break down Bottled and Bond next week. This is the finest plastic screw cap money can buy.
Sure. I mean, this is like the old beer cans that just say beer. Like this, like I can't wait.
Now be careful. I purchased that, wrapped it up in a paper bag, and shipped it to you.
Yes,
so,
you did.
Like, don't offend
me. Yes, you did. I'm not.
This is.
So yeah, I mean, I can't wait. I like, look, honestly, like, I want to get into this and just taste blindfolded. Like, what is this about?
Yeah, now, for those that may have not joined us on the entire journey from episode 1 or show number 1 to now, as we started to review bourbons, it became very clear that Ken preferred a high corn mash bill. He likes the sweetness that comes from the corn.
I do.
So when I discovered that Heaven Hill had a corn whiskey that I believe is over 80% corn in the mash bill and bottled in bond and could be had for the whopping price of $13, I had to try it.
Wow.
And you couldn't find it
again
anywhere in PA.
Nope.
So I hand-delivered a bottle to you, because it's illegal to ship one, so I have hand-delivered a bottle to you in PA. Took a lot of work and a lot of money, but you now have a bottle.
I have a bottle, and it, I mean, but for $13, I mean, you can understand my apprehension. Like, I don't know what to expect of this, and I expect
no. And it's 100 proof, so it it's not a weak whiskey.
No, but like I'm absolutely puzzled, bewildered. I can't wait to get into that, just to be able to compare it.
There are some aficionados out there that say that that's a hidden gem.
Wow!
But we will find out.
Can't wait.
So let's talk briefly about Eureka. So we've got the mellow corn, which is going to be a great way to kick off the episode. Give me a reason to tune in to Eureka. Why should I go watch that episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a build on of this. I really do.
It almost feels like one of those, like where this one would end with to be continued, and you get that two-parter.
Sure. I agree. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going into like how they proceed with gun transport. That's coming up.
Yep.
The strategy.
This deal that went back to the deal that Jax negotiated with the Irish.
Right.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't want to give too much away.
But yes, I think what you said is spot on. It is a continuation of what we learned this week, and I do think it plays very much like a two-parter. So if you enjoyed this week's episode, you definitely want to tune in, and then obviously you want to show up for the Liquid Courage show and hear all of our excellent and insightful breakdown of this episode.
Most definitely, play by play, we're here. That's for right. You.
Over some mellow corn, which quite frankly could be dangerous.
I can't wait. It's capped off. You see it. I'm going to leave it that way till next week. I'm ready.
All right. And I've got a bunch of great background and research on mellow corn that I think will be interesting.
Excellent.
So we'll have plenty to discuss while we pour and enjoy some mellow corn. But for now, that's going to do it for tonight's show. We hope you had as much fun as we did. I want to give you one final reminder. For those of you that are watching on YouTube, please remember to like and subscribe. And again, do check out our channel for more shows. Go back and watch some of those previous episodes. And as you do so, I want you to reflect on how much better the show has gotten since those early episodes. And see, you won't actually know how much better it's gotten unless you go and watch those earlier episodes. So you need to go and do that.
And if you don't, just lie to us because we feel it's better.
That's right. That's right. And then for those that are listening to the podcast, we're looking for 5-star ratings and absolutely glowing reviews. And again, I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you're not compelled to give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review, none would be preferable, right? Like just no review at all, no star rating, like just ignore what we're saying.
Just go away.
Move along.
Just go away.
And move along. Because we only want 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. And then regardless of whether you're watching or listening, and frankly, regardless of whether you like the show or not, we don't care. Go and tell 100 other people that you know.
At least 100.
Tell them to come and subscribe.
At least 100, because I know 100, 200, 300 people that I would communicate with myself.
That's right. Hey. If Amway could build a business on this model, so can we. And it doesn't cost you a thing. Just go tell other people and have them tell other people. And pretty soon, we could actually have a real audience. So
there we go.
Want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. And again, thank you for making it to the end of the show. If you're hearing this, you've made it to the end. Congratulations. And most of all, be sure to join us here each and every week on the Liquid Courage Show. Thanks again. Good night, everyone.